On Talk Radio 98.5 and 1240 WRTA, it's WRTA Weekend. Doug Herendeen, while the colonies are off, we have with us John Kasin. Hello, sir.
Hey, good morning.
And we figured we'd do a couple different shows about a few things this summer. And one of them, I kept seeing things that made me question my faith in humanity. I already have problems with humanity, but that's another story. I'm maybe a little more sanguine about it than some folks. But I came up with this question. Are we getting dumber? And John, what was your first reaction to that?
Well, I thought it was a good topic and a good subject. And I guess we have to define about how we're getting dumber. But yes, things are definitely changing. And I agree. People don't seem to have the same attitudes. You hear the comment more often today, what are they thinking?
Yeah.
You know? And about everything. It's kind of frightening.
Well, there's something called main character syndrome, where people are perceived to be so into themselves that they figure everything else is just revolving around them. We've all known people like that. And by the way, we thought we could sit here and name politician after politician of all political stripes. But you know what? Let's not do a specific politician because it's like shooting fish in a barrel. But we could just talk about all of us because we're not all politicians, despite the fact some people would say, well, of course you are. And never mind. No, we're not going to go there. But it just seems that main character syndrome thing fits now more than ever.
Yes,
where people used to be self-centered, they've been with us since biblical times. You can find historical examples going back thousands of years. But we can find examples almost weekly from people we deal with, right?
Oh, absolutely. No question about that.
Now, I don't know if this quite fits into this idea, but are turn signals optional on modern vehicles?
They're not automatic yet, but I don't think they're optional.
Well, the reason I ask is because so many times I see people in front of me don't bother to signal. It happened yesterday on the way to work. It happened just 10 minutes ago on the way to work here. And it's like, here's the thing. Somebody's going down the street. And it would be really helpful to know what they're going to do. So I'm slowing up. Another car is slowing up that's coming from the opposite direction. There's a pedestrian waiting to cross. They stop. And, the car gets to a certain spot and then just does a quick turn. Did you not know that's where you're going to do the quick turn? If it's a specific road or you're just following GPS, GPS can mess you up, I know. There's a famous example of people driving off a dock because, well, the GPS said. And they right into the drink.
Yep.
Thankfully, they didn't die. But in the examples I've read, I really wonder about that. What's your thoughts about
well,
it?
Well, you're right. You know, and the flip side of the, are they automatic, is the guy that doesn't turn them off.
The blinker stays on for miles.
Yeah, so now you're going down and you have no idea what this guy's thinking or is he thinking. You can't take a chance. You can't pass him if his left blinker's on. You don't know where he's going. So it's a hazard both ways. It's common sense. It's courtesy. It's some degree of intelligence and awareness. So when you frame it in an example like that, yes, we're definitely getting dumber. And you know, the really bad part is if you were to blow your horn at that guy, he's going to do something obscene because he has no idea what you're talking about. He's too dumb to realize he's causing a problem.
When I was driving through a construction zone here on 17th, and they seem to be a semi-regular thing over the past year, but they're making things better on the highway there, so okay, we'll go with that. There was a place where you have to get over, and supposedly there's this thing called zipper merge. One car goes in, the other car goes in, and everybody gets to where they're going, no problem. I'm all the way back, and did you ever see something in front of you and go, I'm going to slow down below the speed limit because, A, most importantly, I don't want to be involved in what's about to happen, B, I'd like to see this for myself, but I'd like to not participate. Car is in the lane, right signal. They have to come over because the lane ends. There's another car as they see it. And this is another thing. It's not a competition, no wagering. But you ever notice you put a signal on and somebody's been lagging behind you, suddenly speeds up and blocks you? They don't go around you. They speed up and block you. Because,
yeah.
No, it's a video game. I'm losing points. So anyway, I see this where the guy he has to get over, so he gets over in front of this truck that was supposed to, you know, just go behind him as I'm to go behind the truck. So they go off the exit, and the first thing, as they get to 99, the truck guns it, goes real close to them, and shoots around like I'm doing my little protest now. And I'm thinking, I'm looking at the car, and I'm looking at the truck, and I'm thinking, that truck's got to be $60,000 to $70,000, and you're going to go after that clunker with a $60,000 to $70,000 truck because, well, you've got insurance, and I'm sure the cops won't mind that you were just honked off at him.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, stay away from said truck. I don't remember exactly what it looked like, but it was a rather large, like we're talking, I don't even think it was a Ford, but it was Ford F-450 size against a passenger vehicle. I'm thinking, what would, say you knocked the guy off the thing and he went off the guardrail. Do you get extra points for that somewhere?
Well, it's amazing. People, as you said earlier, in the program, they're so self-centered, so focused on themselves, and it spills over. When you talk about the traffic, because you brought that whole situation up, the first year I attended college, I went to the center. We don't all remember, but the center up here when we used to park in the swimming pool and go to the classes in the bathhouse at Penn State before it developed into the satellite center it is today. But I drove up from the Williamsburg area every day. We carpooled with other students. There wasn't any traffic. I mean, it was extremely light. We had no trouble.
I know some people may find that hard to believe around here, but.
Well, that's my point. Today, it's terrible. And not only is it getting worse, I'm experiencing the kind of driving locally that I normally only experienced in the cities. If I was in New York or Philly or Chicago or wherever I happen to be on business, it's a nightmare. There are people cutting you off, zipping in, zipping out. I'm seeing that now on Pleasant Valley Boulevard. It's like, what happened? You know, we're a decent.
There's more of us. Well, you know, I've had the theory, and this is one of the reasons I'm out in Pennsylvania versus where I grew up in Metro New York, is if you have that many people packed into an area, they don't act as, shall we say, chivalrous toward one another. It has more that main character syndrome, I think, also.
Yeah.
If you've ever driven on the Long Island Expressway, the world's longest parking lot, you get that idea about it. But you don't have to go that far. I mean, just around here, there's a yield sign on the 8th Street Bridge in Altoona where, you know, you can go one way or the other and you go up over the bridge. They're supposed to yield. And I cannot tell you the number of times. Luckily, I won't approach it if there's a car to my right if I'm going in that lane because I see the guy coming. It's like, okay, are you going to yield? Are you going to? No. So I got to swerve out of the guy's way. And the guy either is got his finger up his nose or he's got the phone plastered to the side of his head.
Yep.
And no law is going to stop these guys from doing it. An accident or two may do it, but I'm not even sure that would knock sense into some people.
No, it's a total different attitude among people than what we were used to.
Where did that come from, though? Is it just that we're not teaching our kids manners or their parents didn't have them themselves? Or it's like, yeah, that's for another generation. I don't care.
Well, I think it's a little bit of everything. I think that's definitely part of it. But there's a difference in the people. There's a lot of good people. I mean, I meet tremendous number of people who are very good, very pleasant, helpful, want to help you, etc. But then there's the jerks seem to stand out. I don't know if they're bigger or different colors or what, but I'm seeing more and more of it, and it's very frustrating.
I mean, here's the thing. If there's 1% of the population that's a jerk, you've got 33 million people in the United States. That's a lot of jerks.
Yep.
The jerk store keeps making new ones. They're never out of them.
Yep.
So I don't know. There's something that I came up with years ago. This is long before I ever heard of main character syndrome or people who always have to be right, I guess. I mentioned it on the show years and years ago, the Doug Herendeen brick wall theory. Do you know what that is?
No.
Say you're driving down a road and it's a four-lane road and you can see all the way down. The visibility is great. Suddenly, from out of the sky, drops a brick wall and it covers all the lanes and the sidewalks on either side. You can't go around this brick wall. Now, what would you do if something like that happened?
stop.
Yeah, that would be my first thing. Oh, I'm going to slow down and stop and figure out what's going on here because there may be another one dropping any second here. What I would not do is keep driving. And to me, the brick wall theory of some people is the brick wall will drop down. They've got 60 seconds, which is an eternity in driving if you're going the speed limit on a road like that, a mile a minute. So you have 60 seconds to slow down, pull off, figure out where the heck did that come from. The brick wall theory I have is these people will not only not slow down, they'll speed up, slam into the wall, and if they're not killed, get out of the car and scream, "That's not fair! Where did that come? I have the right of way!" Yeah, now your car is totaled and you almost killed yourself. But you were right. You had the right of way over the brick wall. Because I don't think there's anything in the PennDOT booklet that you had to read to get the license where it says that you must yield to a brick wall. But it's pretty common sense, is it not?
Oh, yes. I love your right of way example also because I never, ever anymore assume I have the right of way. I mean, if I have the right of way, I'm normally looking both directions. Because someone's going to ignore that. Somebody's not going to think. I had it happen to me yesterday. I'm in the right-hand lane, of course, going down the street. The light turns green. I'm going through. And someone from the left-hand lane who had a turn signal turned right in front of me. I mean, yeah. I could have T-boned them right there. It was their fault, but...
Yeah, but in the end, it doesn't do you any good once your car is totaled or you're in the hospital over it or worse.
Yeah,
I still remember years ago when I was living in Williamsport, we had a T intersection. And I had been having trouble with – I had not been driving all that much at this point. I didn't get a car till I was 24 because I walked across the street to go to work. It was great. And I could walk down the street to get something to eat. And I could take the bus if I want to go to the supermarket or I could go to the one right up the street. So it was no big deal. It was starting to bug me. And then I was reading Ann Landers, and she said, you know what? If you presume everybody around you is going to do something stupid and you have that as your base as opposed to expecting everybody to do everything the way you would, you'll have a much healthier life. You won't be as angry. And the funny thing is, about 2 days later, you know, and they said, you know, one of the things she mentioned, you know, look both ways, then look again. Don't gun it as soon as the light turns green, something like that. So I'm sitting at this T intersection in downtown Williamsport with a very heavily traveled road at the time. And the light turns green, and I hesitate just a second to look. Now, of course, the car behind me, because with a millisecond, you know, you're the guy's going to. And just as I'm thinking, you're an idiot. A car goes through the intersection, right through the red light, and you think that cell phones are bad. This was long before cell phones. I swear to you, this is true. And I saw it, and I couldn't believe it, but I saw it. The guy is got his head down, looking at the dash, and he's got one of the road maps opened all the way, not looking up. He's just going straight, and he went straight through a red light. If I had gone... when the light turned immediately, I would have either been grazed at the front or we would have been T-boned. It's WRTA Weekend. Doug Herendeen, our special guest, is John Kasin, but you will not hear him in this segment. I will explain why in a second here. I find it interesting that the topic that we're talking about is, are we getting dumber? While we were recording this show, and we make no pretense that we do this live, it's recorded every week, we had a technical problem. And I thought we had it fixed as well. No problem. And the other thing I thought was, you know, I'm doing a show and we're talking about, are we getting dumber? And I'm going to do something really stupid, like I'm going to cut somebody off in traffic and cause an accident, or I'm going to, you know, trip over something and break my neck, or just something really stupid very shortly after the show airs. We didn't even have to wait for the show to air, because I'll tell you what happened. The technical mess up that I thought I corrected, I apparently didn't. So if this is not the most ironic thing, are we getting dumber? Apparently so am I. So I don't exempt myself from any of this. But the segment we were talking about, and what really pains me is, you're not going to hear John Kasin's replies and discussion in any of this, and he did have some interesting thoughts, as you will hear in the rest of the program, which he is on. It's timey-wimey, trust me. But he is on the rest of the program. But I got to tell you this story because this was one that we discussed, and it's just ridiculous. This is a true story. There's this guy named Kurt Crom. He worked in a major auto plant in Kentucky for 11 years, been working for multiple years in the auto industry. And I'm going to leave the name out because I want you to sit there and think. You'll be able to Google it if you wish, but it could have been any one of the major companies. May 9th, this guy is working at 3:30 in the morning, and he felt a bit lightheaded because he's diabetic. He had low blood sugar. So he tried to buy a cookie at a payment kiosk that they have in the break room. He goes to the kiosk, swipes his debit card, and it didn't work. So he went to another payment kiosk, swiped the card, it did work, and eats the cookie. We're talking $1.95 grandma's oatmeal cookie. That's on May 9th. Saturday, May 16th, his supervisor calls him into the office and informed him he was being fired for non-payment. He was escorted out of the factory by security. He was not allowed to take his tools. He's got thousands of dollars of tools. Someone went and picked up his personal laptop off his desk so it wouldn't be left behind. He left the building about an hour later after a shift would have ended. He talked to the automotive blog Shifting Gears. Wednesday, May 20th, Crom sent screenshots of his debit card transaction payment to the company and to his union representative. On Thursday, the guy from the UAW, his union, contacted him to say the company needed copies of the bank statements notarized. Friday, June 12th, the UAW informs him that the company had contacted the company that maintains the payment kiosk to confirm that Crom had actually paid for the cookie. The company would be contacting Crom about returning to work. On Wednesday, June 17th, the company notified Crom he would be returned to work on June 22nd. Here's the thing. In the interim, he had found a job that pays even more money at a different company. Womp, womp. On Thursday, June 18th, the UAW skilled trades chairman called. They said he would be made whole for the 5 weeks of lost wages. Then on Thursday, June 28th, he received two checks totaling $28,000. He was due $33,000, according to the union. I thought this was a joke at first, Crom said to Shifting Gears. They said they had zero tolerance for theft, and this has really happened to five people that they've had to terminate before him. I looked at my union rep and said, really? Are you kidding me? Actually, he said something else we can't say on the air. Crom said, if you wanted to get rid of me, you could have just asked me to quit. Why are you doing this over a cookie? Get this. This guy had frequently worked 7 days a week, pulling wires, hooking up equipment, fixing robots and automated equipment, running construction, moving factory equipment. He worked in the paint shop, the body shop, and the final assembly. In addition, he was a member of the plant's emergency rescue team. They sent him to train in Detroit and purchased his helmet and gear, which now sit abandoned in a locker. I'm well trained on how to save people. They spent a lot of money on me. He's the son of a Sinclair gas station owner. Hey, my dad used to own an Amoco station. He's the son of a Sinclair gas station owner who always loved cars. He has a bachelor's degree in political science and economics from Carthage College in Kenosha, an advanced degree in mediation from Marquette University, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. If I may digress here from this to add, so much for the idea that people who work with their hands are dumb. This week, he heads back to a factory in Louisville to reclaim thousands of dollars worth of his personal tools after 40 years as a journeyman electrician. He's a member of both UAW Local 862 in Louisville and IBEW Local 369 in Louisville. He'd been renting an apartment for 11 years in Louisville. His hometown is Kenosha. He had moved everything back to the home he shares with his wife of 29 years, Karen Crom, an electronic health record trainer. He says they fully cooperated with the investigation, and so did the people who were all involved in this. He says, I know the machine malfunctioned. I swiped the debit card. The video showed payment didn't go through. A payment went through at 3:38 a.m. Actually, I didn't think anything of it because with those machines, it happens all the time. When I go into that room, there's food sitting out. People go and pay, and it doesn't go through, and they leave the payment there, and the machines ask you to try again and try again. Shifting Gears talked to the company about Crom's case, how they explained the theft allegation when documents prove otherwise, what will be done about concerns about the payment kiosk malfunctions that may result in false accusations of theft, and whether the company plans to investigate. The company said, "We fully cooperate with the investigations of this nature. At the same time, we remain focused on providing convenient, flexible snack options that support our hardworking customers every day." In other words, you didn't answer the question. Now, this is the other thing that gets me about this. To this day, Crom cannot process the idea that the union rep, "Hi, we're the union. We're here to help you." Does that sound like, "Hi, we're from the government. We're here." The union rep urged him to apologize for something he didn't do. These people appeased the company. He says, "I was at another company for 12 years, and my building chairman would have knocked somebody upside the head and said, 'This is absurd,' but his current company that fired him." And the union rep kept saying, "People go back sooner and have a better luck if they're apologetic." Normally, he bought about 2 Diet Cokes, each shift about $3 a piece. So they're making some money off of this guy. Anyway, the vending company sent the videos to the company. And they say they don't know who the people are, but obviously his company did. He sounded emotional during an interview on Thursday, June 25th. "This is extremely hard for me. After being fired," Crom said he wrote to UAW President Sean Fain and Vice President Laura Dickerson, "I am trying to figure out the benefit for my company in making such an arbitrary, capricious, and draconian decision. I feel confident I will be returned to work at some point, but I'm struggling to see any benefit for the company in this action. They should instead get with the vending company and demand they keep the equipment in good working order to simply allow me to pay for the items, or for anybody else for that matter." He said, perfect attendance the last 2 years for nearly all the 11 years. Even though he lives in Wisconsin and drives 370 miles to work every 2 weeks. I have a pile of these little coins they give employees for doing good work, so this action is very surprising to me. I mean, next you're going to tell me he's ready for sainthood, but I'm not denigrating anything the guy has said here. Another employee had written a letter in support of him, and she said that the glitches in this machine are well known to workers, and they've even happened to her. "You'll turn around, you'll want your receipt, and you can't get one. It acts like it's declining or won't process, and then sometimes it does." Crom says he began his new job the day after Memorial Day, went from earning $48 an hour at the other company to $52.51 plus $10 per hour bonuses. "I'm in the wrong business, although I love it. No one can find enough electricians," Crom said. "So looking back, I think that I would have been very happy to pay for that cookie again, just to pay for it twice. I like the people I work with. I think we made a great product. If I could somehow get back 2 months and just avoid this, I would. I was very happy in what I was doing." If you're going to look at something that is incredibly stupid, this is exactly why people make fun of American companies. I have worked for companies that are not quite like this, but darn close. And that have worked for people like I do now at Leitner, where they're, you know, have intelligence and common sense. Dave Barger was the same way, the former owner of the station. So, yeah, they basically shot themselves in the foot because of this. And by the way, I'd still want to know, where's the rest of his money? He was supposed to get $33,000. God, I'd like to get that much for 2 weeks' work. He was supposed to get $33,000. They gave him $28,000 instead and said, you know, maybe they thought that he didn't pay for a bunch of other cookies as well. It's WRTA Weekend. Doug Herendeen, John Kasin, we're talking about, are we getting dumber? Here's a guy who's not dumb, Victor Davis Hanson. He's a military historian, a conservative political commentator, written for the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, National Review, and the Washington Times. And he had a post recently on social media, "We have met the enemy and they are us." He also taught at Cal State Fresno for about 20 years. "When I started in 1984 at Cal State Fresno, I had really good students. When I finished 20 years later, I couldn't even offer a class with the same syllabus. The kids couldn't do it. They're not teaching what we used to teach. They're teaching therapeutic courses. They're teaching ideology. And that's only going to make people arrogant and ignorant. And that's what these students are. They're arrogant and they're ignorant." We used to have a guy from Penn State, Altoona, who taught elementary education as a contributor to this program. And he said, when the people would come in, and they're going to teach in elementary school, this is going to be what they're deciding to do. He said, we had to start remedial courses because they didn't understand basic English and they didn't understand basic arithmetic. So how are we going to teach them to be teachers when they were failing these courses coming out of our public schools? What's been your experience with stuff like that?
Well, I unfortunately can't agree more. I think in many cases, I don't want to have rocks thrown at the outside of the radio station, but in many cases, I think our educational system has failed dramatically their students. I mean, I know when I worked in industry, I was on the advisory board of several educational associations, and I kept saying the people we're trying to hire, we have to train in fundamental skills, fundamental communications, fundamental attitudes. I mean, they just weren't aware. Now, why? I guess the big trick is, why is that? Why did that happen? I don't have a reason for that, but it was purposeful on the way of the education system. I don't understand why they allowed that to happen. I was just talking to a gentleman yesterday who was a teacher. He now is a businessman, but he told me his last few years of teaching were terrible because of the regulations that he had to operate under and because of the guidelines. It was like doing away with the vo-tech skills. Many of the schools didn't support that anymore. And my goodness, right now, today, that's the best place a person can be. A young person with a skill is marketable. He can work anywhere. He can make good money. But we were, at one time, the educational system was discouraging people from doing that. It's amazing.
It's funny because in my school district, we had something called a BOCES, and I forget what it stood for, but it was pretty much what Altoona Tech and everything else like that teaches. They would come to school most of the day, and then they would go get classes there and whatever they're going to do, carpentry, electrician, or something like that. And when I first got into junior high and there were kids going to this, the attitude was, oh, that's great, they're going off to learn other stuff. By the time I graduated, maybe 5 years later, because it was a couple years in junior high, you could do this, and then high school, the attitude is, well, you know, they're kind of slow. They're going to pound nails into wood as opposed to do stuff like we're going to do. And I thought to myself, are you going to call an English major to build your house? But even then, I started to see that attitude creep in from some of the other students. And it's like, you're not going to call a philosophy major at 3 a.m. when you're tub is backing up all through your first floor of your house.
Well, my brother had, he was a skilled person. He had his own custom furniture business where he worked for very wealthy people doing special projects for them all over the country. Made a lot of money, was very successful. But it was his skill and his communication skills. It wasn't anything that anybody taught him. It was what he learned, what he was able to apply. And the beauty of a skilled person is, if you think about this, they can work anywhere. He could look at a map and say, I want to live in Boise, Idaho, or Tampa, Florida, or El Paso, Texas. And if he's a plumber, electrician, a mason, a carpenter, he can find work there. If you're a finance major, aside from Wall Street, where are you going to go? I mean, you have opportunities. I'm not saying you don't, but you're not flexible. These guys are flexible.
You know, it's interesting to me. I just realized, just thinking about it, my dad's best friend was a construction worker, and their mutual best friend was an electrician. And these guys were obviously very blue collar, but they were very smart.
Oh, absolutely.
The one gentleman had come to America after World War II to get away from what was going on and became an American citizen and had worked for years as an electrician. Now, here's a guy who had to learn English. He knew no English when he was coming here, but he worked hard all his life. And by the way, his English was great. I don't know whether he learned electrical skills there first or came here or whatever. And my dad fixed cars. They met because he fixed their cars, and they just struck up a friendship. My dad could not do anything electrical, but Tony could. My dad could not build a house, but Lloyd could, and they could help each other.
That's right.
Doing stuff like that. So it's interesting to me that and these were not dumb people. They were very sharp in what they would do and discuss.
I have a friend has a couple of grandsons, and several years ago we were invited to their home for a holiday dinner. I was seated across from the two grandsons, who at that time were about 13 to 15. And their topic of conversation at the dinner table was who made the best backhoes.
I mean, and if you use them, that's important.
And we can laugh, but those kids had a backhoe before they had a driver's license. And they are live in a local community, and they're putting in sewer lines.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to rent a truck. They had to pay someone else to haul their backhoe there, but they could get the jobs, and they could do the jobs. Mm-hmm. One of them is now out of college, but he took business. His other brother is in he's doing heating and air conditioning. He's going to school for that. They're performing their own business. They already have a half a dozen rentals. Tell me these guys are failures because they didn't graduate.
Yeah. And by the way, somebody's going to say, well, Victor Davis Hanson, it's one of those conservative hacks if you don't like him. Okay. Would you say that Berkeley, the University of California, that's right-wing conservative? No, for those who don't get the sarcasm. According to the University of California, Berkeley, amidst a broader debate across the University of California whether incoming students are arriving on campus academically prepared for college-level work, several professors told the student newspaper, The Daily Californian, that reading expectations have steadily declined over the past two decades, prompting some instructors to scale back assignments in order to maintain meaningful classroom discussions. You know, they're saying that we used to give them 35 pages a week. Or no, actually, 100 pages a week. Now it's 35. 100 a week. Think about that. That's 25 a day if you're just doing it Monday through Friday. But that's too much for them. They cannot comprehend it. They cannot read. They do not have the attention span to sit there and go through that and retain any information. So they're dumbing down the courses. Part of this is to spare the students the cost of purchasing books, but it's also to acquiesce to the sense of complaints about the amount of reading assigned through those complaints. Curiously, they haven't gone away as I've shrunk the number of pages assigned, said one of the professors, associate professor of history at Military and American Studies. And again, that's coming from Berkeley. But they're both saying the same thing is happening to them.
Oh, absolutely. We're lowering expectations everywhere. And what happens when you lower expectations? You get less. You don't get more.
I don't know that we have any, by the way, suggestions on how you change this, except maybe I would say don't lower the expectations.
Absolutely not.
Expect the same, and maybe you get that.
Well, you know, I'm not a sports person, so this may be a bad analogy, but it's like if the football players can't play a really good game, let's shorten the field to just 50 yards. I mean, that's what we're really...
No, that's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen, but think of it's ridiculous. You're not going to shorten the field, so you have to not lower the expectations.
Do you remember what a McGuffey reader was?
No.
It was a book that was out in the late 1800s and still used into the early 1900s. And it was a book that had everything from hymns to Bible verses to trigonometry to physics to geography to history. And there were a lot of kids who were expected to read it and know it. And the excuse of, I don't wanna, was never allowed.
Mm.
And I found one of these things years ago, and I thought, I'm glad I wasn't there, because I don't know if I would have gotten through this slog. I would have had to make the old college try, and this was not college, this was elementary, secondary, and high school that they were using McGuffey readers. And you can still find them in antique shops, and they are very thick, and there's little tiny print, and there's a lot of stuff in there, and that would give anybody who is going through that a very well-rounded education. which today I don't know that any of us are going to get or any of our kids are going to get, even at the best universities.
No, I agree. No, you can't lower your expectations and get more. Doesn't work that way.
It's WRTA Weekend. Doug Herendeen, our special guest, is John Case, and we're talking about people getting dumber. Now, there's things that are stupid, but then there's sinister stupid, or is it sinister evil? Some people would look at some things and say, well, that's the influence of, and I don't know that you even want to get into that. I have a story here, and I take nothing away from, I think, the responsibility of the person who shirked it, but who hired them? If you have somebody, in this case, this is a hospice care person, supposed to take care of a patient in home. That's a pretty important job, right?
Absolutely.
You think now you're going to get the cream of the crop that want to do this, and I know some people are going to say, yeah, well, you ought to pay them better. I agree, because I've seen people do this. There's this gentleman who was 86 years old. He was a hospice patient in Florida. His overnight home aide heard a thump. She found the gentleman on the floor with his head wedged between the bed and the nightstand. He had fallen out of bed. He's 86. He's a hospice patient. Now, what would you think you would do in a case like that? Either, I would think, physically try to help him out, or what else could you do?
Yeah, you're going to physically help him. You're going to also call for help if required or if available. Yes.
Yeah, call 911 if you think you can't handle this. No, this was, 3 in the morning? Yeah. Went back to bed. She went back to bed and left him there. Okay, she wakes up the next morning. So you think she's going to go check on him. This reminder is a home health aide, paid to do nothing but take care of this gentleman. No, she wakes up, grabs her cell phone, and spends 40 minutes on the phone talking with her parents about everything under the sun. Then it's like, oh yeah, goes in. The man had suffocated to death.
Hmm.
Her response when she was asked why she was not upset about this? He was old anyway, so what does it matter?
Ooh.
He was old anyway, so what does it matter? Now, we've all met that person at work who sees no sense of urgency in doing anything correct. Good enough. We've met a few people like that in this area.
Yes.
But I get the feeling they're universal. It's good enough. If you're dealing with life and death, it's good enough, ain't going to work.
No, absolutely not. I don't think there's anyone who wouldn't fault her for her action or lack of action. I mean, that was ridiculous.
But here's the thing. In the several news stories I read about it, she is incredulous that anybody is upset about this. Well, the guy fell out of bed and died. Well, so what? He was old. It doesn't matter. It's like it was literally your only job to keep the man safe. And when he fell, he was still breathing. She could have done something right then and there. I know he's in hospice, so he's going to die shortly. But he didn't have to die that way.
No, no.
So what do you do with somebody who is so ragingly stupid as this woman is? And by the way, in the comments on some of the articles on Facebook, there were people making excuses for her. Most of them wanted her hide and said she should never see light or air again. She should be put in jail for this. I didn't see anybody say she should be put to death. But it was pretty clear the majority of people were, well, half the people were sitting there saying, oh, well, what's the big deal? She's right. He was old. He was going to die anyway. He's in hospice. What does this matter? And I'm like, how do you get that calloused?
Well, you know, in my opinion, obviously she should never work in that field again. I mean, this isn't something you get 30 days off and can come back to work. No, she shouldn't work with that kind of responsibility, because that is a responsibility. And I've met many people working in that field and in hospice specifically who do a wonderful job.
They're overworked, but they all have a sense of dedication, and they're going to do the best they can possibly do for the people. These are the people I've met.
Absolutely.
Those are the people that took care of my mother when she was in hospice. Something like this would have never happened in that facility.
No.
And this was in the man's home, and she's being paid, I would presume. And if it's not enough, my thought would be quit. Anything else.
People like that, you could fire them over the phone and they wouldn't leave until help, until their replacement came. I mean, they're that dedicated.
The competent ones are.
The competent ones are.
Her.
This lady was obviously not competent. She should not have been in that position. She should never be in that position again.
And by the way, this is just an average person. She's of average intelligence. She's not somehow mentally challenged in any way, shape, or form. She had done this job for a while. And I don't know if there have been reports. I'm betting. Oh, there were no red flags. And then a week later, you come back. Well, there were a few red flags. And then you come back. Oh, there's a field of red flags. And nobody did anything about it. And that's the thing. If you enable stupidity, don't you get more of it?
Absolutely. Yes, you do. And so if you tolerate dumber, you're going to get more dumber. You know.
That's the thing that shocks me. I feel for people who are in a tough situation. But I'm not going to sit there and say, it doesn't matter what you do. You have no standards that we're going to hold you to. If somebody's had a tough life, the worst thing you could do is just let them continue along the same path and say, yeah, you're really not competent for this job, but we'll keep you. Because, well, if we let you go, you're going to be in trouble.
Yeah.
Well, now they didn't let this woman go, and this man's dead.
Yeah.
So I think, as much as we were talking about the silly stuff earlier and turn signals and traffic and a mega corporation firing somebody over a $2 cookie they did not steal, they did pay for it. Well, it's like, you know, there was an organization, and I won't mention it, but it's a retail chain. They're not allowed to have food at their cash register. She's a diabetic. She felt herself getting woozy. She needed sugar. She got one out of the cooler. Paid for it, put the money in the machine. They caught her drinking. They fired her. There's something called the ADA that's going to come back and bite that company very, very badly.
Yes, absolutely. Well, there's a case of I alluded to before where people don't think. They're following some arbitrary rule that was put into place. They don't apply what's really happening. So.
You think we can turn it around and stop ourselves?
I think we can. I think we can, but you have to do it individually. I mean, we have to do it collectively, but we have to start individually. It's just like accepting less standards because you can't meet the higher standards. That's not going to get us to where we are today.
Yeah, that would be like telling a firefighter, you don't have to have the stamina to carry a ladder,
exactly.
A body, and all this stuff and all the gear on you. It doesn't matter if you can't do that. We'll hire you anyway.
Yes.
That firefighter is not going to live very long when they get into a fire, and it's not going to help the people who already have the house on fire. John Kasin, any final thoughts?
No. It started out to be kind of a funny subject, but it's a depressing subject. And unfortunately, we all have to do our part to not only be smarter, but act smarter. And don't let everything else be control you. You've got to make your own decisions.
Colonies will be back soon. John Kasin, thanks for filling in on WRTA.
Thank you, Doug.
Podcast up at WRTA.com in minutes.